You're listening to the Top Dog Social Media Podcast. Tips and tricks from the experts, featuring Melanie D'Addaro.
Welcome. This is Melanie from Top Dog Social Media. And today I have the pleasure of interviewing Nate Keevman, who's the executive editor of LinkedIn and Business, now with more than 14.5 million subscribers. You can check out that magazine at socialmediamags.com. Nate has also has the number one LinkedIn strategy group on LinkedIn and has taught more than 35,000 people how to master the platform. He's authored three books on the topic, including LinkedIn Mastery, an all-inclusive guide to mastering LinkedIn. He's also presented as the keynote speaker on social media strategy for the National Speakers Association winter meetings just this last 2011. So thanks so much for joining me today, Nate.
Welcome, Melanie. How are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. How about you?
I'm having a great day.
You know, you've done a fantastic job with LinkedIn and Business Magazine. It seems like it's quite the undertaking to do an online publication of that level of quality that Social Media Mags is doing. So what in your previous background has really helped you with this new venture?
You know, Melanie, for me, it's been, I did a master's in business, and I kind of did the school of hard knocks after that, just trying to figure out how to build my own businesses, and found some successes along the way. And as my consulting practice started to evolve, I realized the power of LinkedIn, and I kept using it as a tool to help my clients accelerate their growth. And I would say that for the magazine itself, the success stories and my ability to actually practically apply the use of the tool LinkedIn to everyday business use is pretty much the sole reason I've been able to build authority that I have and then also be invited to be the executive editor of that magazine.
Yeah, I did notice on your LinkedIn profile that you've got two master's degrees, one in business and the other in sports administration. So what aspects of your education has really contributed to your success with social media?
The education is good for, from my point of view, it's been good for about two things. One is it teaches you how to learn and how to kind of reverse engineer things. And the second is, it's so hard going through two masters in 2 years that anything else seems kind of easy. So I guess that would be the two main. But, you know what? Actually, the biggest part of it is actually networking. That sports administration program is one of the top in the country from Ohio University. And the network that I'm a part of with that really kind of educated me on the power of a network. How can I leverage a network of 2,500 alumni to accelerate my own results? I started my career in consulting and strategy advice for businesses by doing exactly what you're doing here today. I started off with doing interview series with people that were in my alumni network, and it was amazing. I got to interview billionaires and head of marketing of Coca-Cola and some amazing people in my network. And so I guess, if anything, that was a huge contributor to where I'm at today.
That makes perfect sense. You know, so many people forget that social media is really networking online, and the things that they do online are completely non-conducive to what they would do in person a lot of times. You'll have people that will just start pitching you and trying to sell you stuff, via social media. They would never do that, at a networking event. They wouldn't come up to you and say, "Hey, buy my stuff."
They're looking for numbers. People can hide behind the computer and they don't realize it is so personal. And, I think that you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, no, that's terrific that you were able to get that experience and really translate that into social media, because it really is. It's, networking online and offline is very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So in your experience, what have you found to be the most crucial components of determining ROI with social media, both for yourself and for your clients?
It's a really great question. And actually, before you get to ROI, you kind of have to determine what the metric of success is for the organization. And what I've found is that there's really two trains of thought. If you look into the social media world, we have this big divide between direct marketers like myself that are very focused in on ROI but they're also, you know, it's very results driven. And then you have branding organizations, typical agencies that are focused on building a brand. Both are very applicable through social media and both are very powerful in their own ways, but you can't measure them both in the same way. So you'll see things like Radian 6 and other tools like that that have come about because they're measuring influence by mentions, which is a branding metric of success. Where most people are think of ROI, they're thinking return on investment, when social media oftentimes is return on energy, return on effort, ROE. And that's the branding side of the world. Not to be taken lightly because it's extremely powerful. When it gets to the ROI in way of the investment, the monetary dollar, the things that I found most successful are LinkedIn, primarily in the B2B space, and creating very specific programs and campaigns that yield a very specific result, almost like a direct mail program online in a lot of ways. Very powerful if done appropriately, and then, you know, could be very, you know, exponentially bad if it's done the wrong way. So, like you said, if you go about it with the approach of, I'm going to just go pitch everybody and send you a traditional sales copy and we're going to do it through LinkedIn, then you're not going to have the success that you're hoping to get. So I find that ROI is primarily, valuable through two efforts. Again, one, LinkedIn campaigns, where it's a direct result like that, or second would be like an editorial calendar approach, taking a long-term strategy for creating influence and awareness of your own brand through the content that you contribute. I think there's a couple others, but those are the two main ones.
Yeah, no, I agree. Those are great. Excellent. One of the things you were just saying is, you were talking about LinkedIn and how that's one of the networks that you really like to focus on. I'm a big, huge fan of LinkedIn, too. So I'm curious, you know, what is it specifically about LinkedIn that you like so much? Is it just that it's B2B, or is there other features or components to it that you really like?
You know, I came from kind of a direct mail kind of environment. So direct marketing was my forte. And the reason I liked LinkedIn is it was very specific. It was there as a professional network. People weren't afraid to talk about business with one another. It wasn't kind of taboo as it is on Facebook. And I just found that the platform was highly engaging, highly relevant for creating strategic alliances, for building advisory boards, for building a business, you know, for business development, for talent hiring, talent management, all of those things you could use LinkedIn for highly effectively. Not that you couldn't use, you know, Facebook and Twitter for. I actually hired my main assistant through, you know, found me on Twitter, so, which I don't do a whole lot of, right? But so I think they're all powerful. But I love LinkedIn because it's ever-growing. It's very much the mindset within it is, hey, I'm willing to do business with you. I'll talk with you. You can provide real trust and credibility with what it is that you do. That's why I love the platform so much.
Yeah, excellent. And you've written, three books on LinkedIn?
Yeah, a couple workbooks, a few quick start guides. My main one is LinkedIn Mastery, an all-inclusive guide to mastering LinkedIn. Kind of like, you know, everything you need to know about the book, about the platform, I mean, to really kind of get going for your profile, for groups, or company pages, marketing strategies, and all that.
And if somebody wanted to get your book, Nate, where would they find it?
Just go to linkstrategies.com, and you can check out the store, and it will see one of the links there. Take you to the book.
Okay. Excellent. Good. So how do you manage your time effectively with social media? And what advice do you give to people who end up just spending way too much time, you know, with way too little results on social media?
That's a great question, Melanie. I think there's like kind of two approaches, you know, from the social media consultant world. You know, we have two types of people in our world. I'm sure there's more, but, you know, the diehard, everything's straight authenticity. It's got to be you and your voice every time. You can never outsource or use assistance. And then there's, you know, what I would call the business professional, the business executives. They're like, look, it's impossible for me to do it all on my own. As long as I authorize the message, I'm fine with outsourcing the rest of it, right? So there's authenticity, but then the delivery is kind of managed. So, yeah, social media managers is one of the top growing professions in the entire world right now in a way of being hired at larger and smaller organizations. So I manage my time through social media by creating the strategy, writing the content, and then authorizing my team to deliver that content in the ways that I have instructed them to do it. So I spend myself personally, unless it's with a client, kind of doing some research, maybe 15 to 30 minutes a week in the platforms. And that's all of them, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+. I think I'm probably on the low end for the social media consultant world, but I'm mirroring what my clients want to experience with social media. They want to know how to use it the right way. And a lot of my, you have to understand who my clients are. My clients are a lot of the top, authorities in the world. You know, people like Stephen M. R. Covey and the John Assarafs of the world from the movie The Secret, or Yannick Silvers in the internet marketing world. And then, you know, head tech companies that are, you know, just they've got to prove their model out because they've just raised $80 million of funding and they have to talk to their market somehow. So those are my primary markets. And so that particular niche that I serve, I was very busy, hard to reach as a vendor of theirs and as a friend in many cases. It's still hard to get on the calendar. So finding additional time for them to get into LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter or any of those things is like, you know, pulling teeth. So you have to create a strategy that supports their everyday behavior but still translates into the authenticity that's required for social media to work. So that's how I manage my time, is through creating strategic plans of content and then having, you know, and having that delivery mechanism, you know, be kind of strategically outlined.
Yeah. Well, that's terrific that you've got it dialed down that well, that you're only on 15 to 30 minutes a week. My goodness. I'm envious now. That's my new goal.
Oh, yeah. It's fun sometimes just to get in there and poke around. But, most of them, you know, the things that I care about come to me via email. And I filter them that way. And if I have something that needs a response, I'll send that to my assistant who will go post it. So it saves me time to logging in and waiting for the site to load or whatever it is.
Well, and people like yourself, Nate, and you know, John Assaraf and Yannick Silver and all these people who've created a lot of content, you know, in the way of books and articles and programs and stuff like that, it's very easy for them to delegate stuff to team members because they've got so much content created. So it is, you're speaking in their, you know, in their voice by just sharing some of their content.
So it's a lot easier market. And what you hit on another good point is the person that has the hardest time getting in social media is not already a publisher. They don't have a mindset of creating content continuously. And for those people, I would really highly recommend checking out Joe Palitzi's information at contentmarketinginstitute.com and just getting into the whole, you know, content world. Because right now, over 30% of all the Fortune 500 marketing budgets are dedicated to content right now. And, you know, content's king in a lot of ways. If you can't put out relevant, good quality content for your core market, somebody else is, and they're going to gain their attention. And companies that used to be leaders are going to, in the near future, not be leading if they're not producing their own content and it's not good content. So if the future organizations that we're working with, small or large, don't have a social media manager, a content strategy, and a content publishing arm or outsourced version of it that works for them, then they're going to be obsolete when they're competing in the digital space. If they're, you know, and if they're not in the digital space yet and their industry is behind the times, as many are in the B2B side of the world, especially in manufacturing, it's going to become harder and harder for the ones that are not cutting edge to stay relevant, and then they'll just go out of business.
I completely agree. I talk to so many different companies on a regular basis that are wanting to, you know, start looking into social media, and one of the first things that I always suggest is, you know, you get a blog, and a lot of companies have a hard time imagining what they're going to blog about depending upon their particular industry, but there's always something to blog about, and it involves, you know, a little bit of thinking outside the box and coming up with some ideas, and like you were mentioning earlier, you know, creating that content calendar, that editorial calendar, of the different things that they're going to create. And then, of course, those blogs can be spun off into so many different ways, LinkedIn posts, Twitter, Facebook, and so forth.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Blogging strategy is a cornerstone for any social media strategy. If you're not blogging and you don't understand the power of blogging, then you're missing the boat, because that's really how – that's like you're looking at the wheel and you have all the different social networks on the outside of it. The hub is going to be the blog, and that's going to give you an access point to authenticity, to engaging people and pulling them into your marketing funnels, whatever they need, that may be. And I think, you know, Melanie, you're absolutely right that so many companies miss the value proposition of why a blog is so powerful. But I think that's our job, right? So let's look at why would we say to a company, get a blog. The company says, well, I don't want to do a blog. That's what they're thinking in their mind at that point is expense and a lot of work. And then that, which equals time, all of which they don't have, right? So,
yep.
But everybody will make time for something if the value proposition is high enough. And so when you give somebody an example, like my good friend who's a seven-figure blogger, she actually makes $100,000 a month through Google AdSense because her content is so good. She gets so much traffic. She literally works 3 days a year on her blog and makes $1 million plus from her blog. Now, is that something every industry can do? Probably not. Most industry markets aren't going to be that big. But could you generate revenue from it just by creating good content and having a good blog strategy? Absolutely. Can it also not only just create good, you know, like AdSense type traffic, it could also, what it will do if done appropriately and targeted after the right keywords, will attract your core market. Like a great example, and I give this whenever I'm talking about blogs, is I created an editorial calendar for my blog, right? And so I just consistently will put out, you know, I try to put out about 2 to 3 posts per week. And in doing so, over the past couple of years now, I added a tweak something and I wrote something on my blog about, you know, social media for authors. And one of the many followers that I had saw that, and because of the blog authority, what it did in the minds of my followers was it had gifted me the authority of, like, I was on stage, call it a virtual stage. And I was on this virtual stage to them, and I just got out down off of my stage, and they saw that I'm doing something off on authors. They emailed me and said, I'd like to talk. Turns out that this person is an executive coach for the Fortune 100 CEOs, and he wants to do a book launch, and he wants to use LinkedIn, and he wants me to do it for him. And so, you know, a mid five-figure contract later, you know, after 30 minutes of a conversation, this is not a long, drawn-out sales cycle. It's, yes, let's do it. Okay, great. And boom, we're done. All of that was only possible because of the blog strategy. So what it does is it allows for the sales cycles to be shortened. It increases the per deal transaction, and it lengthens the lifetime value of a customer. Those are the three reasons why every business in the world should have a blog. And if you're not doing that the right way, or you're doing, you know, just outsourcing the content to a, you know, an overseas VA that's not great at content writing, then I think you're kind of missing the purpose of what the blog actually does. So those are my few cents on a blog. I'm pretty passionate about it. I think it's very powerful.
Absolutely. That's great, great feedback. So if you were to give clients, potential clients with a sales organization, some advice how specifically to use LinkedIn to approach cold calls, what would you say?
How to approach cold calls.
If you've got a company with a whole sales organization and they're considering using LinkedIn as a lead generation tool, what would you suggest to them in terms of using that for lead generation and approaching, you know, cold calls to people that they don't know right from the get-go?
It's actually quite complex. I'd challenge the sales organizations to rethink the model of cold calling and generate inbound calling, inbound inquiries to set up calls. But if they wanted and were really dedicated to the cold calling strategy, I would tell them to try and source every cold call on LinkedIn prior to creating that call so you had some information about the prospect. I would actually have the salespeople do a quick pre-qualification to make sure it was a relevant person and allow them the authority to say this is a non-qualified individual and take them off their call list. That would be just for the cold calling side of things. I think you can also add in Jigsaw for that, which is now, I think, data.com, which is purchased by Salesforce, which would also be a good tool to cross-reference that with. I'd use those two platforms for kind of a cold calling strategy. And then, but if they're open to rethinking the model, which I would highly recommend, I would create a collaboration with the marketing department through LinkedIn to have the sales team, a small team of the sales team, facilitate inbound inquiries through a very strategically created marketing campaign through LinkedIn to their core markets.
To warm up those leads before they approach them.
Yeah, remember, we want highly relevant conversations with the right people, but we also want it at the right time. So creating it over a consistent period of time and creating a good long-term and short-term strategy is going to create inbound inquiries that are highly warm, if not hot, when they do inquire. And that will be a great facilitation and better use of time for everybody, marketing and sales.
That's great advice. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about your group, the LinkedIn Linked Strategies. It's got almost 35,000 members, and I know you've got a lot of activity on there. I'd love to hear about some of those initial strategies that you used to help get you the first 1,000 members, and then from there the first 10,000 members.
When I started Linked Strategies, it was actually I think we actually had called it like LinkedIn Traffic Secrets or something different right when we started. Then I ultimately changed very quickly to LinkedIn Strategies. And the only reason it's not LinkedIn Strategies is LinkedIn wouldn't let me use the word LinkedIn, or it would be. So I left it at LinkedIn Strategies. And I only had like 100, maybe 300 members at the time. So I ran through some communication initiatives and tested some copy that I was using to help, you know, target very specific, you know, entrepreneurs and business professionals to join the group, which worked and got me up to about 600 people. And at that point, I was just like, man, I got to be able to grow faster than this. And I went and I did some research, and I found like two or three other groups that, you know, consider themselves in like the LinkedIn strategy, teaching LinkedIn kind of space. And in so doing, I was able to convince those individual owners of those groups to merge all of our groups into one, which took us straight to 3,000. And from there, kind of got some organic growth, took us up to 5,000-7,000, somewhere in there. And from that point on, I've implemented a strategy, a communication strategy, that has allowed us to grow about 1,000 to 5,000 per month ever since. And, you know, it's been, you know, I haven't done any direct marketing to grow our group in probably 5 or 6 months. When we do, we'll grow at about 5,000 a month. We just haven't put the attention into that as we were refining our web pages and our, you know, our offers and our product line and all of that.
So where are most of your members coming from now at this point in time at this stage?
Well, we have some really great keyword strategies. So one of the things that's neat in groups on LinkedIn is if you're a large group already, like if you type in Harvard on LinkedIn groups, you'll see Linked Strategies as, I think, number one. So for any of like the Ivy League schools or cities that are, you know, San Francisco, New York, Chicago, and others, we include those in our keywords. So when somebody types in San Francisco, Linked Strategies should be on the top five, or same thing for New York or Chicago and so forth. You know, a few other larger groups in the job space have copied that. They have like 200,000 members, so they're always at the top. But we're in the top five, and with our 35,000 members, it gives us a lot of leverage. So the neat thing about a group, once you get leverage on the size of a group, then you can literally play around with your keywords and kind of figure out what people are searching for. And if you can figure that out right, then you're going to get a lot of organic growth. We get about, I'd say, 30 or so, 7 a day to 50 a day is probably just organic growth. And they're just finding us through the search engine on LinkedIn, I believe.
And so where are some of the places that you suggest people to insert keywords to be found and come up for the specific search terms they want to be found for?
The only place that is relevant on LinkedIn groups is in the description, in the short description. Anything else is pretty much irrelevant. So play around with that. Once you start getting over 1,000 members, that can start becoming more advantageous. Until then, it really doesn't matter. Your first 1,000 is that hardest hurdle. Most groups on LinkedIn are not over 1,000 members.
Right.
Once, you know, and then over 10,000, I think there's under 500 of us now. I got to check the numbers. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but it's definitely under 1,000. So there's very few, very large groups is the best way to describe it. And then there's over a million under 1,000 or something like that. So it's an amazing number. So.
Uh-huh. Awesome. Well, congratulations on the success you've had with your group. You've done a phenomenal job.
Thanks. It's been fun. You know, what's interesting about the groups is once we got past the 20,000 mark, we started getting hit with tons of spam. And to eliminate that spam, we actually put a filter on and all posts are moderated. So every morning my team goes in and if something is posted, as long as it's related to social media or LinkedIn, it will get through. We don't filter, you know, competition or anything like that. We don't care. I always want the quality of the group to have really good, engaging conversations. And so we get, like, I'd say over 100 posts a day is not uncommon, and, like, 30 of them are relevant. So we got rid of a spam-free group now, which is awesome. It's almost all entirely about LinkedIn or social media. Occasionally something will sneak through somehow, but very rarely.
That's terrific. I know that does require a lot of work. So you have a team of people helping you out with that?
Yeah, it's not a really complicated process. You just have a single admin do that every morning, and that's all it really takes. You know, maybe 30
Oh, you're just doing it once a day?
Once a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to do it where we did it live, and they would actually just monitor the group all day. And finally, I just went to the group and was like, guys, we don't have the resources for this, so this is what we're proposing. And the group was like, overwhelmingly do it. You know, they just said, go for it. So it's a great way to crowdsource and actually get feedback from the mostly engaged users, which are, you know, a lot of consultants and social media strategists and so forth.
Yeah. Excellent. So what is the biggest returns that you've seen from the success of your LinkedIn group in regards to your business?
Thought leadership really allows me to, the positioning of the group and the success of the webinars that I have. What's great about our group is I can do a webinar with 20 minutes notice and have 200 people actually show up to a webinar, which is, for anybody in the webinar space, that's significantly large. Little promotion time, we'll get up to 750 has been our max in attendance for a single webinar. So that's yielded a great opportunity to create sales opportunities for new product launches, new programs, new services, whatever it is. And then, it's allowed me, I think the group is a strong reason and why I was able to be the keynote speaker for last year's winter meetings at the National Speakers Association on social media and LinkedIn. Did two separate sessions, one on a black belt session on LinkedIn, and then it was the keynote for the social media strategy session, which was pretty awesome. And, it's just been relevant for that, thought leadership, positioning, followers, every part of business. It starts with having a tribe, and, we have a lot of people that follow me, so it's really helpful.
Yeah, terrific. So my last question for you, Nate, is do you have any recent projects that you've been working on, or do you have anything, that's coming up that you want to share with us?
Yeah, keep your eyes out. We're working on a LinkedIn API that will make the whole process of business development super easy. We're working on it. It's going to be a little ways out, but we're working on that. I'm excited about that project. There's a few other things. I have a few other, things I'm working on that are kind of a little bit more confidential on the software side in way of services, projects. Yeah, I think that's the main one. I mean, nothing else is really a big surprise or secret from what we're doing.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today. I know that you've shared a lot of your knowledge with our listeners, and I'm sure they've gotten some really good ideas about, how to gauge their ROI using social media, how to maximize results from groups, and a bunch of other things. So I want to really thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.